Listen, I went to this exhibition earlier, the gallery. It was like the history of beauty or something, like different cultures. It's talking about how beards had come back into fashion at some point. There was this video from the 60s of this man going into this barber-like experience, and then they hand-stitched some sort of beard together with hair from women from India and fully made a beard for him and stuck it on his face.
Is this not like some sort of like spy movie that you were watching?
No, genuinely. And it was all about actually beauty and the cultural kind of relationship, and also like generally across history. It was fascinating. Everyone should go to it at the Wellcome Collection in Euston. But it is really interesting because it then talks about even the objectification of women over history and different women from different cultures and how beauty is seen. And how it's evolved.
I'm down in London a week on Monday, so I might see if I can get to
pop along for an hour. Might learn a thing or two and see how your beard can be
made up from India's hair.
This is entirely laziness because I was kind of rather shaving. I wouldn't class this as beard. I'd class this as just growth.
You look a bit more rugged with it. You definitely looked like more just I don't care anymore.
I've got like full hobo.
Stick with it. See where it goes.
Well, hopefully it'll go outwards.
If it goes inwards, you have some problems.
I feel like it goes up, like over my face, over my eyes. I'd be like one of those dogs England that you see, beard, which has those like hair clips, like just getting the hair out of their eyes.
Welcome to today's episode of Digitals in a Cruel World. Today, we will be joined by Vidya Peters, who is the CEO of DataSniffer, to talk to her about their latest raise and valuation and what they're looking at in terms of their business growth in the next year. We're also covering app news and a little bit of news from our sponsor, Advanced Track. If you haven't come across Advanced Track before, they provide offshoring and outsourcing services for resources, so give them a little look up. Just before we head on to app news, I'm with my co-hosts John Toon and Ryan Piercy. How are you, Ryan? How's your week been? And also, how have you been post-Fab, which was this week?
Fab was great. It was smaller. I'd say, not exclusive, but definitely more personal. There were some really great talks, really looking forward, and less pitches from app vendors, more interesting insights into the future, especially around AI. So yeah, I enjoyed it. Really enjoy catching up with everyone. And I have a few apps to look at post-show.
Yeah, talking about AI, is our AI extraordinaire, John Toon. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Cindy. I think Reflections on Fab, very similar to Ryan, really. It was a really good show. I think the focus on bookkeepers in particular helped them to attract a slightly different audience. And the AI chats all seem to go down really well as the usual stuff around tax and bits and pieces. I saw the talk by Dan Needle late on the first day, which is really interesting, very fascinating guy for anyone that's not aware of him. And yeah, given the sort of the doom and gloom that maybe surrounded that event, I think they really pulled it out of the bag. Congratulations to the guys at Karen Webb and SIFT and everything else. So very good. How are you doing, Indy?
Doom and gloom? What do you mean doom and gloom?
I think there was a bit of negativity around whether or not it would be busy and whether or not the vendors would get decent numbers through the door and stuff like that.
I think I really enjoyed our talk as well, talking about the future of AI and how firms could prepare themselves. Even though we wanted to do a bit of an intimate roundtable event, we were flooded with people, which was really good. Just meant we had to think on our feet and still seemed to get a lot of positive feedback and an endless queue of people asking us a bit more information afterwards. So, yeah, really good. And yeah, Indy, how was your weekend?
My weekend was very good, Ryan. It was just a nice bit of recovery from Fab. Just what I needed, actually.
Lots of rest and relaxation.
Absolutely the ticket for it, Ryan. Absolutely. I had a brilliant weekend. Thank you for asking me.
Should we jump onto app news?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. So I'll kick off app news this episode. I guess as expected, maybe, but unfortunately, there is an end to Zero Go. It is being retired in September 2024, so later this year. Announced probably about a year ago, I believe.
Was it not ZeroCon in London?
Yeah, when was that? Was that last year?
2 years ago.
Two years ago. But last year we covered it again because of MTD. What are we saying? What, it's just been parked and sunset altogether because
it's
had no traction. It's not really been talked about for quite a while. It's a free tool for micro businesses to be ready for making tax digital. Didn't get really anywhere near enough traction. And they've decided to basically get rid of it. Businesses that are on it can upgrade to the latest version and allow them to download the data and use it in a different solution. Or if they want upgrade into the start and standard plans.
What does this mean, Ryan, for businesses that had come out with these versions of MTD, really simplified, skinny bookkeeping softwares? So Coconut was the other for MTD, and obviously they were required.
Yeah, Dext had a version, didn't they? Sage, yeah. QuickBooks all launched something.
Is it that we're just saying that these softwares are just irrelevant, not needed, unnecessary, and therefore it's just best to go with a proper software application and through the accountant anyway?
I think there's a lot that was released in a short period of time. I think when CR released theirs, there was a lot of question marks. I mean, we talked about it on the pod and what actual impact it would have. Sage still have theirs. QuickBooks still has something for the small self-employed businesses. I don't think those will go. But it became too busy in the space. And I think that we're seeing what we'd expected to see. And we talked about it at the time that a number of these vendors would disappear. I guess I'm not that surprised ZeroGo is one of those.
I think also with the MTD agenda being delayed and deferred, the kind of anticipated sign up to these products, whether they were free or not, it's just not happened, has it? And it's quite clear that for the kind of micro businesses, the sole trader type small businesses that were going to be caught by MTD, that they just don't see any real benefit or value in moving to software currently, no matter who it's from. That's just another nail in the coffin. And I guess from a product point of view, from the likes of Xero and others, is that maintaining a free product with certain attributes and the technicalities and stuff that come with it clearly is not a priority for them. And I question why a freemium model works for these kind of players, because I don't think it should. And I think Xero have kind of come to that conclusion. I've got something else on Xero, which is a little bit of a rumor. So there's nothing official out here, but I have spoken to a few people at Xero about this. And there are rumors afoot that Xero are going to be launching a payroll bureau product probably towards the end of the calendar year. So it's not something we're going to likely see imminently. Although I'm fairly certain that given that we have XeroCon coming up in, what is it, 3 months' time, something like that, that we'll see some announcements around payroll and probably some improvements with the main payroll product. For anyone that's familiar with Xero Payroll, it's had a sort of slightly tortuous lifetime, certainly in the UK at least, because it was a product they built from the ground up and it was launched lacking quite a few features in the early days. It's probably become much more functional, but it still has some disadvantages, particularly when you've got a sort of a larger, more complex payroll compared to other bureau products around the market. It'd be good to see some improvements there. Also, we've got the whole payrolling of benefits requirements are coming in 2 years' time, I think it is, which are going to affect every bureau payroll provider up and down the UK. So there's going to have to be some changes irrespective. But yeah, it sounds like they're spending a considerable amount of time on looking at that product and improving it. So I look forward to hearing what they have to announce at XeroCon, assuming I can make it. And like I say, there's a potential bureau product in the pipeline for the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, that is good news because I got to the end of my tether with Xero Payroll. It's not really moved on for the last 3-4 years where we've been using it. And in the end, we've actually moved a number of our clients off into another payroll bureau product. So great that it's coming out, probably partly as a response to what QuickBooks have just recently released with their payroll bureau product and what Sage have done building their cloud version out. It made sense that Xero have one, so I'd be really excited to see actually what comes from.
And hot off the heels of our AI chat this week, Xero at their inaugural Investor Day announced the release of their AI Jax that's going to be released into the product. So they've got some sort of generative AI support that will be released onto the Xero web pages that will expand the tool's functionality. So they haven't really gone into a lot of detail. The focus will primarily be on payments and cash flow reporting. So there'll be like automation or streamlining of repetitive tasks. So things that might be in terms of chasing overdue invoices or payments or following up on missing timesheets for payroll runs, etc. They haven't actually released it yet. It's still in its sandbox model. And they're saying that it's due for release later in the year, I believe, but no words on whether it will be a chargeable service. So I think it follows a stream of news that's come out from the other big platforms, Sage and QuickBooks, on the release of their co-pilots or different AIs. And we obviously covered a little bit of the apps that we have seen that have also done a good job of releasing AI as a core part of their software tools this week. So we mentioned a couple, Silverfin and a couple of others. John, in the talk, remind me.
We've got Silverfin, we've got Digits over in the US. Who else? Pixie here in the UK in practice management. Yeah, so there's a fair few tools around, isn't there?
Yep.
And I think the name's actually put on the better ones as well. Jax Just Ask Xero. It's probably, I think that's actually the main positive news or positive response I saw on LinkedIn, was that everyone liked the name. Not to be confused with Jack by Genesis, which is an AI tool as well, and it goes across all platforms. But yeah, Jack, so what was a pretty cool name.
I was going to say, I wonder if how Nikolai's feeling at Genesis now that Xero have released Jax and he's got a product called Jack. Anyway, those are nice problems to have, right? Being confused with someone from a huge competitor. Anyway, I have something on exactly the same vein from Sage. Can you believe it? So it seemed like the other week that it was Copilot announcements galore from all of the major product vendors. So Sage have announced a Copilot, which is going to sit across the vast majority of their products. Apparently, it's going to sit within predominantly their cloud-based products at the moment, and then it will be implemented and rolled out across things like Sage 50 and some other products in due time. It will be a paid-for feature. So it's currently in beta and it is free at the moment in time, but once they've rolled it out and implemented it, it will become paid for. Now, I think that's an interesting angle from Xero. I'm not sure quite what Xero are doing with Jax, but I think Sage proposing to charge more for this is not in line, I don't think, with most of the Copilots we're seeing in other products at the moment, with the exception of obviously of Microsoft Copilot, which is an additional fee. But everyone really expects that, you know, that to come down in value over time. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how Sage implement this and roll it out. It is along the same lines as most of the sort of Gen AI stuff that we've already seen in other products. So you're going to be able to have conversational prompts and ask questions about information and data within the wider thing. And obviously for Sage, at least, this is not the first time that they've been into the whole chat assistant kind of world, because they did have Peg back in the day, which didn't last too long and was withdrawn. Some people, including myself, have rather mischievously called this Peg 2.0. And let's see if it lasts a little bit longer.
Surely it has to be Peg 2.0. If they don't call it that, or Peg returned, Peg with a vengeance, something like that. That's how it should be. I've got something else from Sage, not as exciting as AI, but they have acquired BidMatrix, which is an estimating tool. It is focused on the construction industry, and it's helping to transform the Sage estimating suite that they've got, which sits inside Sage Construction Management, which is a cloud-native project management solution built for the entire of the construction industry, and also Sage Intacct Construction. Once again, as Sage Intacct is cloud-native, it is also an element, or I guess a facet of the Sage Intacct product, focused and designed specifically for the construction industry. So that acquisition of BidMatrix is helping to enhance those solutions further. And it's quite obvious that Sage is trying to take over that entire industry and be the dominant software vendor in that space.
Bit of news from QuickBooks, who confirm FRS 102 and personal tax filing. So there was a QuickBooks conference at Get Connected in London, and they're saying they're going to release a few more products that will make it more accessible. It's sort of a fast forward to some of the products they announced last year with QuickBooks Online, with FRS 105 annual accounts and CT600 filing capabilities. So it's making it more realistic and more achievable for accountants to manage client data in QuickBooks Online and make the adjustments in the work paper area and then push the data into its ProTax tool for FRS 102 and personal tax filing. There was a couple of other announcements made with the QuickBooks Ledger, which was a new plan that sits below the current Simple Start subscription. It seemed to have some reference to making tax digital for income tax self-assessment. I'm not sure how this is going to compare and compete with the Xero Ledger product that's in the market, but they do say that QuickBooks Ledger will have CSV import functionality and offer the capability to switch between cash basis and accruals accounting. It won't have invoicing or billing capabilities, and there's some features included in there, such as automated bank feeds, bank reconciliation, financial statements, and the ability for accountants to push data into QuickBooks Online work papers and tax preparation tools. So some advancements made for the QuickBooks product. Not sure if we've had any other QuickBooks representative talk to us about it. Have we spoken to Aaron, Johan, or Ariona about this? And maybe this is something that we should try and catch up with them on. Guys,
I did briefly speak to Aaron at Fab actually about this, because they were mildly teasing me about the fact that I wasn't at the QuickBooks event. They said they're going to go full FRS 102, so I think that takes them a step ahead of most of their competitors in terms of functionality. It'll be interesting to see if they get it right, because I think moving to full FRS 102 accounts is actually a big leap. There's not many cloud products that do that. As it happens, I've been talking with other mid-sized firms in particular around the challenges of trying to transition away from these on-prem solutions to cloud-based solutions. The challenges around account production in particular are a big one that needs to be solved by the vendors if they want to compete with the incumbents, because the complexities and the requirements that larger firms have around things like full FRS 102, but also charities and other sort of slightly more nuanced accounting requirements, just something that is not replicated in the market at the moment. And as soon as somebody gets there, there's going to be a big shift, I think, in the market.
Yeah, John. And speaking of incumbents, it's like you're teeing me up for my news, which is Wolters Kluwer have announced that they are getting one step closer to offering their suite of cloud accounting products. I guess they've been talking about this for ages, but they're getting products in the UK for practice management and compliance. It's literally what you've just said. And they're calling it CCHI Firm. Now, this isn't live as of now. They basically said this is coming. I guess they've been doing that for years, but now they've got a name to it and they've got a bit more structure around what it's going to look like. And they've stated it's going to come in the next couple of months. Of that, there are a few products that will be coming out straight away. One of those is CCHI Firm AML, so anti-money laundering, as they're doing all the checks, basically to help with that onboarding process to get into CCH Central. You're getting accounts production and you're getting personal tax. And then iFirm Validate as well, which is looking at bank confirmations for audit software, which is using blockchain technology. So it'd be interesting to see what that would look like when it comes out. And the main benefit, I guess, of CCH iFirm is that if you're already using the practice management suite, you can manage stuff on your on-premise solution while connecting into the cloud native tools they're releasing. So I guess they're doing something after 10 years of talk about it, and it'd be good to see what it looks like fully when it's released.
It's glad to see. I'm glad to see we're getting this hot off the heels of those infamous red t-shirts at Accountex last year. It's good. And I'm told, with the exception of the AML product, is that they're expected to start releasing in May. They're going to do the basic stuff first and then build out the functionality of that product over time. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what these look like. I've seen a few sort of screenshots and screen grabs of some of these products. My one immediate comment is that they don't look much different from the traditional products, and that's disappointing. The design requirements and the usability requirements are completely different. And I think just replicating your existing product from the desktop to the cloud is not acceptable. And it'll also be interesting to see how they decide to price this, because you can access the CCH API for about £1,500 a year. So you can actually connect products into CCH Central if you wanted to, and you've got the capability of doing so, and you're willing to pay for that API access, which is a mild bee in my bonnet. And in terms of the AML product, they have released that. That is available. It's a standalone product as well, so it is available to non-CCH customers if they want to use it. They've done a lot of work on this product and have worked out that there's significant time savings to be made from doing this. I think they're anticipating that they'll bring in things like biometric checks over time and some other additional functionality to make it a little bit more seamless. This is not too different from what Iris have already done, what Bright have been doing of late. Again, my question is, why build a product like this when you've got really good products like Xamarin and FernCheck, which are already further ahead of these products that they are in the market? I know you want to tie people into your product suite and everything else, but ultimately, for me, they've got to be seamless experiences and they've got to have high-grade functionality. So I think accountants and bookkeepers out there who have AML concerns and issues, which all of us do because it's a highly regulated, problematic area, is that you should go for a product that really serves purposes across the board and not just because it's built into your product.
Yeah, and you also got products like Summertech out there that are built onboarding that integrate directly into CCH already. So they've solved that problem. I don't understand why they've gone out there first. Maybe because that was the easiest thing to build because it was completely different. They'd have to replicate anything. And I understand your point of building something in the cloud, it needs to operate differently. But I guess a big frustration of those that were using the traditional systems from a finance perspective moving to the cloud is that it felt completely different. And so they were scared of it. My gut feel is they're trying to make it at least look the same to help with that change management transition. As long as the functionality is built to work in the cloud, I'm not necessarily against that. Just if they've pulled back on what they could do to suit those that are reluctant to change, that's where I'll be a real disappointment.
Yeah, I do get that point, but I would say, as vain and as silly as this sounds, people do buy products based on how they look and feel, you know, and how they interact with them. And I could give you an example of two products in the market that we've looked at with our team. And I think the functionality and the capability of one of the products is better than the other. But when we sent our teams out to look at this, do the reviews and do trials, etc., the overwhelming feedback was that the product that looked better, it was easier to navigate, was slightly more modern in terms of its look and feel, was the product that they went for, even though I would say on balance, the functionality of the other product was slightly better. And I think that's the market we're in now. We are used to using mobile technology on our phones, in browsers and stuff. And we're just unwilling to use an interface that hasn't changed since like the late 1990s, early 2000s, I'm afraid.
Complexity is key. On that note, Apron, who we will have the pleasure of being joined by Bogdan Uzbekov on our next podcast, have also released some additional functionality that has removed a bit of complexity. So they've served up an invoice capture tool using their OCR technology. It can read and process documents, capturing line by line totals, taxes and descriptions from invoices. So it's all with a view to help with the automation around reconciliation. And that's because most of the documents, if they're kept in a separate place, very difficult to reconcile with the payments that are being made. They're saying it's in a bid to become more of an end-to-end accounts payable automation platform. So it makes it easier for accountants to review all of the data in one go, assign comments in batches, tag the clients, and then also the client can be notified if there's any missing documents or leave a reply. It's a kind of firm step forward to try and marry up the payment side of what they're doing with the invoices and also add some additional automation in there around chasing of invoices. It looks quite slick, very user-friendly. And as you're saying, it's the way forward for most of these softwares is if they're able to hit not just one, two or three agenda points in like the payments flow. So again, the invoice being captured for a range of different technologies, including WhatsApp. It could be sideways, it could be upside down, still recognize, still post everything into the right place that it needs to be posted into, reconciles it, chases it, can add notes to it. Looks like a really nice release.
Yeah, we've had invoice capture tools moving into the payment space. We've now got payment tools moving into the invoice capture space. I guess this kind of aligned with my predictions for the year that we've just got a year of consolidation, right? You've got lots of these kind of taking over a complete area as they've grown out. And I would not be surprised if we see some acquisitions or mergers in certain spaces where they start to become a bit cluttered. And as well, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Dex go into the payment space in the mid to near future.
Yeah, moving on to a complete tangent then, is can you believe that MTD Faritsa is back? Having seemingly got kicked down the road for a while, HMRC were at the Festival of Accounting and Bookkeeping the other day, and they were talking about the MTD agenda and the fact that there is a private beta that is going to go live from the 22nd of April. They're looking for approximately 1,000 taxpayers to join that. So it's not a huge number, but I guess it's the start of something. And there are also confirmations at FAB that the timetable for MTD for income tax is not going to change, which I'm sure, given the FAB audience, where everyone was completely disappointed about that because it gets the angry old men on the accounting web riled up. You can find out more at the HMR website and stuff. But it'll just be interesting to see how this plays out over the next few months and whether or not we get any more announcements and a widening of the beta. Because I think that's probably the key thing is that we've been involved in some of the betas for previous versions of MTD, whether it was VAT and obviously the very early days of income tax. And it's helpful for firms, I think, to get involved. But it has to be useful and functional. And the last one for it was a bit of a car crash, to be honest.
Yeah, it's good it's moving forward and that there's a big enough testing period. I think that's the risk that we had before they delayed it last time. I'm moving us back slightly towards invoice capture. Pleo have made some small changes to their app across multiple different areas. So I'll run through a few of these now. So firstly, invoice approvals can now be done in the app itself. You had to do this via email historically, which was a bit backwards for a cloud-based system, but we've now released the ability to do it directly inside the app. We should make that a lot easier. They've also brought in invoice statuses. So you can just hover over where an invoice is and it will tell you where it is in the approval flow, who's approved it, etc., which aligns very closely now with their changes to approvals. Employees can now also reimburse themselves on the web. They had to do this via the mobile app previously, so a little more flexibility in how that works. And they've also enhanced their fetch feature for invoice capture by bringing in a receipt inbox, so it'll bring it all into one area that can then be moved directly into the main area of Pleo.
Little extra bit of news from Pleo was around their pricing plans. Extra. Read all about it. Pleo's pricing plans effective from March the 15th, which was a few days back, Clio's advanced plan starts at £99 a month and includes new releases such as spending budgets, SaaS vendor cards, and higher overdraft limits. Cashback contracts require a minimum of 12-month commitment with upfront payment and new bolt-on packages that help clients customize their Clio subscriptions, including additional 0% FX tiers, invoice tiers, and new and cheaper reimbursement only users. Just a little bit extra on Clio there.
And how do we feel about Clio at the moment? Because they seem to have been very quiet in the UK over the last few months. You know, they had a very active team, very active community and group of people that were out there on LinkedIn going to events and stuff. And we just haven't seen them, have we?
I think they've gone through that transition from raising lots of finance, throwing a lot of money at growth, to now having to transition into becoming profitable. And so because of that, they've had to pull back. We see them less, but the product is still developing. I don't think there's anything negative about it. It's just less visible because they don't have the huge marketing budget from raises to throw events. I still like the product. We still have got clients using it. I think it sounds like they're making their pricing model a bit more complex from what you just ran through. But yeah, hopefully it's something that still works really well for our clients now going forward. And then I've got something to finish on, and I've left this to laugh just personally because I love it and I've been waiting for it for so long. In an app news all about AI and huge advancements, it now doesn't feel as big as I first envisaged it. But Lightyear, the invoice automation system, have brought in the ability to deal with employee expenses. And it's always been a frustration of mine that it's not been in the product. They have never released it. Employees can use the app, take pictures of their invoice, have it automatically extracted and pushed through the approval process, see complete visibility of how that's going on, how it's moving through, and then get built and pushed straight into the fun software on the back end. Now, Lightyear is that brilliant mid-tier advanced invoice capture approval tool that sits usually above the likes of Dext and Clio, et cetera, that we've talked through today. I'm buzzing that they've now got employee expenses in, because it was always a pain of mine to solve those two problems with two different apps when I really wanted to bring Lightyear in. I can now just bring Lightyear in to solve both areas.
Do you think they've taken the product to infinity and beyond now, Ryan?
Oh, no. Once they bring in payments, then it's to infinity and beyond. There'll be a strong buzz around it, John.
Hey, but I'm sure. I think this is a great move from Lightyear, and it follows off the back of some of the stuff that Sabi was saying. I think when we interviewed him at Dext, that things like expenses, you know, are becoming more core to some of the long-standing players in this market. So I guess maybe we'll be waiting for Sahara to move next on this, because they don't have expenses yet in their products, so maybe they'll follow soon.
Is that how it normally goes down? Wow.
Got the snorkel on.
Forward.
It's a bit like Jordan's moustache, which we realised was like...
I mean, that's got to be tickly, isn't it?
Yeah. His vagina Velcro, as we've described it.
Yeah. Why do you call it vagina Velcro? What does that mean?
He's stuck down there for ages. Like...
What? How does that work?
Do you understand how Velcro works?
Yeah, but how's it stuck?
So basically John's implying that the hooks...
I can't believe I'm having to explain this. This is what happens when you're smooth down there. You're like a billiard ball, aren't you? That's the problem. That doesn't happen up north.
You are comparing a moustache to genitalia and some...
No,
I'm not comparing. Oh. It's like a match made in heaven. It's
Velcro.
I know what Velcro is, Ryan. Velcro to me. I don't know what you mean by Velcro.
So, when he goes down, he then can't get back out again because it's stuck in the...
What?
This is all to record. I'm having to explain how this works.
Why?
Look, I'll go get a doll.
Jordan understood it straight away. So that's all I mean.
I thought he looked very handsome and I thought he looked cool, but I'm now like really confused. Is that the thing?
He looks like Freddie Mercury.
He does look like Freddie Mercury.
Is that what?
Our moustaches are classified now in general.
No, for love of God. No. I just don't. Let's move on. There's no chance you'll get...
Well, you can have the porn star, can't you? And you can have the handlebars. But that wasn't the
midlife crisis.
What is that, Ryan? Exactly. A prepubescent boy.
As much as I can do.
Squeezed it all out.
Somebody had to turn you off, John.
I can't remember the last time I had sex.
I'm sure John's got the equipment to do it.
I'm like, Ken, smooth down there.
John's downstairs looks like my upstairs. That's how I hear.
That's why we could never 69 ride it. It'd be too confusing.
Like what she said in Barbie, just so you know, we have no genitalia. Nothing, because I have the genitalia.
It just says trademark down there or something.
Does it? At least somebody owns it.
I'm really glad to welcome back Vipul Sheth from Advanced Track to talk a little bit more about what it is that they do. And this time around, we're going to be talking a little bit around audit services, because I know, having spoken to Vipul, this is something new that Advanced Track are moving into. And I guess, Vipul, you know, over to you. I mean, why is audit so important to you?
I guess the driver for us was customer need, but also development of our own people. We've got bright young men and women within our business. What we're looking to do is see how we can deliver more value to them, and also to attract a new group of people who perhaps we hadn't looked at in the past. Yeah. So they're probably the main reasons that we look to audit.
We know that the demand for audit services in the UK for audit firms is still very high, but of course, you know, there is a staffing resource crunch, if you like. And so,
yeah.
I guess an opportune time for someone like yourself to step in and try and help to ease that burden a little bit.
Yeah, very much so. I think the biggest thing that we're conscious about is training, quality, and the two go hand in hand.
You mentioned as well, there's an opportunity for you in terms of your people to help move them along and give them a different challenge as well. I mean, how important is that for you?
You work in a large firm, John. You'll know once you get good people, you don't want to lose them. And the challenge for us as a business is we've all been there. I was young once. And as we go through, you get to a place where you get bored. Whereas if you are given a new challenge, you think, you know what, I'll hang around because that gives me something new to work on. It's something else that I can do. But part of that challenge for us is how do we pay them more? If it's more demanding, higher paid work, of course, we can pay them more. At some point, they may turn around and say, Vipul, thanks very much. I'm off, but let's hold on to them for as long as we can and give them the opportunities that we see for us as a business and for them as professionals within it.
What are the challenges that you've seen mid-sort of size firms that are maybe not as familiar with outsourcing audit work? What challenges have you seen people I've had to sort of overcome, or what do they need to let go of in terms of trying to make it work and be effective?
Change management is the big thing. It's like putting in a new piece of software. I'm sure you've seen the people who've got used to whatever you've had previously. Oh God, having somebody next to me who I can talk to, that's always the best thing. And I'm not saying it's not, but I think COVID really showed the value of even working remotely. And I think that's often forgotten, that we are not where we were in 2003. Now what's happened is firms like yours and others are using these tools on a day-to-day basis. Because it's not just collaborating between colleagues, it's actually collaborating with your clients, getting them to share information at the appropriate juncture, and it follows the process through.
Agreed. With a lot of your team based in India, it gives you the opportunity of having that time zone overlap as well. So you've got a wider range of time to be able to do work, haven't you? So you're adding extra capacity almost by consequence of that, aren't you?
Yeah, very much. We do a lot of academies work for a lot of firms. The fact that our guys are online 5-6 hours before the UK opens, it means that overnight, we've produced files, we've produced sections, and carried out all the work in advance of the UK teams arriving at their desks. And what that then means is they've got everything lined up, ready to go. So they've got a much more efficient day planned for them.
You mentioned an area of specialism there. What other areas of specialism do you delve into? Because audit is very broad ranging, but within that, there are, you know, very much a number of niches which require more specialist skill as well.
We do a lot of commercial audits, which is bread and butter for most firms, but we do teachers' pension. We do independent examinations for a lot of charities. There's a whole range of things which our guys are just used to doing day in, day out. at academies, it's just because there is that crunch. All of those academies need to be delivered within a very short window. When we started audit, it seemed a natural place to start because we had a group of people who'd already had a lot of experience in that area.
Are you able to work to different methodologies? Because obviously, again, broad range of methodologies available in the UK marketplace and lots of firms will be operating in different ways. How do you assimilate that into your team to make it work really effectively?
It'll depend on a firm's demand. What we will typically do is work with them and say, which methodologies are you using? What training do we need to do? Or can they provide some training to the team that they've got assigned? Because we work on a dedicated and block-based approach when it comes to audit. Yeah. So if you're a, let's say, a Mercia firm, what we'll do is we'll identify what the training needs are and we'll have completed that with the firm's help. Clearly, some are very popular programs and a lot of our accounts team will be very familiar with some of those products. Yeah.
What do you see as the opportunity really for firms that maybe are looking to take advantage of the increasing size of the audit market and making the best use of a business like yours to help bridge that gap?
The big firms are shedding audits, which is really creating huge opportunities for the mid-tier firms. But what you've also got is the smaller firms giving up audits. So you've got work coming from both sides and firms would love to take advantage of those opportunities, but the restricting factor is talent in the audit market. What we're creating is capacity. And the thing is, good people are good people. I think what COVID has shown us all is it doesn't really matter where they're based. And that's the big thing that I find amongst our team is they're hungry to learn more. And that's always a good thing.
Agreed. Well, thank you for that, Vipul. Exciting times, I think, in the audit space, and particularly if you can solve that resource and staffing issue, because it's definitely the limiting factor, I think, for a lot of firms at the moment.
I think we should just say that there's nothing wrong with a bit of bump and grind.
I did my best to keep it clean, but you just dragged us back down there, didn't you, boys? You dirty, dirty boys.
Saying that you don't see nothing wrong with it, Brian.
There's nothing wrong.
And just to add, there's nothing wrong with some bump and grind. And John's anaconda don't want bum unless you've got a bun, son.
We should do these as if we're just reading the news, so we just do it completely deadpan.
Andy Tadler, Anchor, John Toon, Water Sports, Ian Piercy, Local News, App News, with a little bump and grind.
And in this episode, we have...
John Toon, Anaconda, don't want some unless you've got buns. Oh my God, Becky, look at her butt. <It's> so big. What does she say?
And over to Ryan on the streets. Oh, yes, I've been interviewing people today and I found out that there's absolutely nothing wrong with a bit of bump and grind, according to people in Shoreditch.
And in other news, I want to lick you up and down. can you say stop?
Over to the weather.
Oh, my gosh. Across the UK, it's going to be generally moist. Flooding in certain areas. I am delighted to say that we've got Vijay Peters joining us from Data Snipper, a fairly recent appointment as CEO there, and obviously gone through a significant investment round in recent months as well, taking the company to $1 billion valuation. So I'm sure there's plenty of things for us to talk about. But Vijay, great to have you on the podcast. And I wonder if you could give us a little bit of your background. You've had some very interesting roles at some very significant companies in the past. So plenty of experience to bring to this new role that you find yourself in.
John, thanks for having me. It's great to be here with you on your show. And yes, happy to tell you a little bit about myself, a little bit about Data Snipper, and of course, talk about our recent announcements. So a little bit about me. I started my career at Bain & Company as a strategy consultant, worked in Chicago and then in Southeast Asia for a couple of years in Singapore, Hong Kong, Thailand, and India. And as is typical of the program, went back for graduate school, did a dual master's in business and public administration from Kellogg and Harvard, and then spent about 7 years at Intuit. I was eager for operational experience, and it was probably my first time getting a very deep understanding of the accountant life and small business accounting pain points. And it probably is some of that early experience that then brought me full circle to Data Snipper. So I'll touch on that a little bit later. But Intuit gave me a really good understanding of just how underserved accountants are and how painful and tedious their day-to-day work can be without the use of technology and software. From Intuit, I joined MuleSoft, spent a little over 4 years with them, and learned everything about enterprise technology and APIs and everything in between. And then did something entirely different, went into the fintech space and spent about 3 years at Marqeta in the payment card issuing infrastructure space. But during that time, I also moved to the Netherlands for personal reasons. My husband is Dutch, and we'd always talked about raising our children here. And spent almost 3 years working Bay Area hours from Amsterdam, which was in and of itself quite an experience, especially in the middle of a pandemic. So I was absolutely delighted when Data Snipper came along. There are a few things that stuck out to me. One is what a simple and elegant product the founders, Kai, Marty, Jonas, had built to address what I would say is almost the forgotten customer. And it took me right back to my Intuit days. When you think of auditors and how manual and how long the hours that they work are and how few solutions there are to make their work easier, Data Snipper was solving a very large pain point in a very elegant way. And it was so drop-dead easy to use. I remember downloading the product and immediately feeling within a few minutes, oh gosh, could I be an auditor? And that's a very dangerous feeling to have for someone who's never studied accounting as a degree. But I knew that they were doing something very special. But second, I saw opportunity for this to be so much beyond audit. When you looked a little bit closer at who they were serving, it did have a large portion of auditors, but it also had customers in oil and gas and healthcare and insurance and mining and everything in between. Because at the heart of it, everyone every day is trying to match and connect data and make sense of it. And the founders are absolutely delightful. And the culture that they built was something that I was super excited to be a part of. So that's how I found my way to Data Snipper.
Amazing. I know I want to just wind back a little bit in terms of, obviously you started out in consulting and moved to Intuit and started to learn how scary a world it is to work in the accounting space and things. But what was it that convinced you to move from that consulting role and consulting space into moving to Intuit and dealing with a huge product in the US in particular, but also internationally? And as you say, moving into learning more about accounting and small business environment as well.
I think it was my hunger to move from theory to reality, because I think consulting gives you a great framework to look at challenging problems with a very analytical mindset and break them down into very logical questions that you ask. And of course, you ask those questions and you mine data and you come up with some great insights and hypotheses, but that's where largely the work ends. And there's something very unsatisfying about that. And I wanted to own the outcome. I wanted to see whether my hypotheses actually moved the needle for the business, whether they actually proved themselves out. Because there's a lot of intellectual prowess that goes in theory, and there's a lot of humility that comes from trying to do something in the real world. And I realized that thinking you may know the answer is about 20%, and 80% is about figuring out the nitty-gritty details of what it takes to actually implement that in market, doing it fast enough, doing it in an elegant way, and actually seeing whether the customer accepts or rejects your solution. And that is in and of itself a whole learning. It is a learning that once you experience it, it's pretty hard to go back to the theory. It's a little bit like to read something versus writing something on your own. They're both enjoyable, but I think everyone will agree that writing an original piece is a lot more challenging. So I was inspired to see that reality in action. And honestly, I never went back.
Was that quite challenging from a mindset point of view and also to get accepted within Intuit to take that theory to application?
I think there's only one word for it. It's humbling. It's humbling for you personally because you realize how little you know and you realize how few the skills that you actually need to make something successful in the real world you have. And there's a vast valley between theory and reality of what happens. So that's one. But there's also the second, you realize that while people may respect your analytical abilities, it's a whole different thing to earn the respect of having to own the numbers and to deliver results and outcomes for the business. It was a transformation that had to happen, making that entire skill change. So even now, actually, when I have so many colleagues and team members that come up to me that are early in their career and say, hey, I really wanted to go into strategy. I think strategy has an enormously elusive sort of elite prestige euphoria about it. And I always discourage them. And I say, that's a great foundation. It's fine. Go do it for a couple of years. But then come back and actually own the execution. That is where the learning lies. That is where the hard work needs to be done.
It's that old adage of getting on the shop floor, right? In terms of learning how a business runs from the nuts and bolts.
That's exactly right.
There's always these things that you see on LinkedIn, like, you know, the top five business books that you should read. There's always topics of discussion around, you know, strategy, theory, hypotheses, things. What enabled you to take what you had already learned into that practical application? How did you break that down so that you could say, now I'm going to go and test that theory and try and get it into this business and make it work?
Yeah, I would say there are a few wonderful strengths that strategy teaches you. One is it helps you cut through the noise and see the signal. The second thing is it allows you to approach any situation with a sense of courage because you don't have to know the industry. You don't have to know that problem set in order to ask a logical set of questions and break them down, peel the onion to where the nuggets are. And there's tremendous goodness in that. It gives you a great set of tools to approach. But again, that's only the approach. And once you've done your analysis and you've formed your points of view, you've cut through the noise, you've been able to work through tons of data, ask the right questions and develop ideas on where you think the nuggets of value are, then comes the experimentation. Then comes the roll up your sleeves. What does it take to get a product in market that addresses that pain point? What does it take to release an absolutely new customer experience? What does it take to blow the socks off your customers' feet and be absolutely wowed by something that no consulting can teach you. You got to figure that out on your own. Another learning I had was just motivating and building great teams, as anyone on your podcast will know, is that no job is a one-person show. You really need to have an amazing team working with you with complementary skills, really rally behind a mission to go build something amazing for your end customer to deliver an amazing experience. And I didn't quite learn that until I got on the shop floor, to use your words. And the reason is, in consulting, you're working with very like-minded people and you're all cut from the same cloth. But the truth is, to build great customer experiences, you want people from very different backgrounds and skills so that you're building a complementary skill set. And how do you figure out how to motivate, inspire, and get everyone rallied behind the same goal when they come from extremely different backgrounds and experiences, diverse points of view? And I think that's the beauty. That's the real magic of when you do something great, when you can make that happen.
And I guess those people skills, though, to a degree, are not stuff that you learn in consulting either. Those are sometimes things that you just have to learn on your own, right?
You absolutely do. Because when you are in consulting, you're speaking and working with people that come from similar universities and similar educational backgrounds and motivations. And they're all cut from the same cloth in many ways. It's not a very diverse place. And I just don't mean diversity by skin color or gender, I mean by thinking, mostly because of what they recruit for and what they look for. But my first operating job at Intuit was selling telephone support plans for a declining desktop product. That is not a great product, first of all, to cut your teeth on, but one of the best learning experiences of my career. But you're sitting on the floor with call center agents in Tucson, Arizona, and then you come back and then you're working with salespeople. And then you're meeting with retail agents from brick and mortar stores where your product is going to be sold. And then you're working with accounting product managers who've been steeped in the accounting ins and outs. And then you go, okay, how do I get this entire team to work together to design something incredible that customers will love? Now, that's a whole different skill set from anything I'd learned before. So no, consulting did not prepare me for leading great cross-functional teams.
What's the silver bullet to making a team really work if you had one?
Number one, it starts with hiring. You've got to ensure that you are hiring a great team. And by the way, nothing else can make up for that.
How does that work, though, if you're coming into an organization? Because obviously you can't come in and change the team overnight. That's almost impossible in most cases.
What you will learn is you can pick and choose your players. And so you may not be able to hire, but you can make the case over time of forming the team that you would like. And I think that's super important. So number one, ensure that you have the right people on the boat. And no strategy and no product will make up for not having the right people around the table with you. Second, I can't tell you the amount of hours, weeks, months you will waste because the team is going to want to pull in different directions. In order for any team to be effective, you have to be razor sharp on what it is that you're solving for together and what it is you're not solving for. So saying no is almost more important than saying yes. Defining what that success looks like in very clear terms so that it's not just a subjective, oh, we want to build something great. Now, what does that mean? What are the outcomes that you want this to deliver for the customer? And ensuring that you're bringing a very lean mindset. I think the teams that do really well are the ones that don't have these massive project plans that go into weeks and months to figure something out. But hey, can I build a lean prototype? Can I put this in front of the customer? Can I see if this resonates? And then make the case for more resources to go from there. Those are exactly the kinds of skills that consulting doesn't necessarily teach you. It teaches you how to analyze historical data. It tells you how to read the time for something that already happened. It tells you how to explain something. But these are some of the skills that I learned at Intuit the hard way, which help you craft some of the future.
I always find it fascinating when you talk to people who have worked in different places, because I think that ability to draw up differing ideas and thoughts and things really helps people in their career, particularly in our world. If you get into accountancy, you're really 20s and then you don't leave until you're retiring, really. And I think sometimes we are a little bit blinkered in our world and we don't draw on enough outside business information, which is ironic given that our role is to talk to businesses and to understand what entrepreneurs and business leaders and not-for-profits are doing. But do you think that broad experience has really helped you get to where you are now?
John, it depends who you ask.
Who should I ask that video?
Right. I believe that for any team to be successful, you want a combination of experiences on the team. You want the people that have the T, which is they are super deep on a domain. And then you want the people that also bring the breadth and perspective across industries. For me, because of how my career has shaped up, not by design, not by intent, but because I've chosen to follow people and I've made my choices based on people that I've been excited to work with, has ended up much broader than anyone could have architected. No one architects a career and says, hey, I'm actually going to hop around a few industries and see how this goes. But if you had seen me at Marqeta, the number one concern people always raise is, but she doesn't have payments background. She doesn't have the payments experience. I always believe great teams are a combination of people that bring the depth of experience and those that also bring diverse perspectives and exposure to a variety of different problem sets. So that's why I say it depends on who you ask.
I think you made a very interesting point that you just slipped it in, was that you followed people. You're interested in working with interesting and good people. How do you figure that out from the outside when you're going into a new role?
Yeah, for me, it's three guiding principles. Number one, the interview is a two-way process. Just as they are getting information about you, it's imperative that you are also taking the time to understand them, asking them questions about their motivations, what excites them, what keeps them going, what are the challenges they face, understanding their values. That's number one. Number two, spending a little bit of time researching and understanding their past experiences. Maybe looking at their interviews where they may talk about hiring or building high-performing teams. What is their philosophy? What do they tell, not just you in the interview, but what do they share in public? And last but not least, I always pick up the phone and talk to people that we may know in common to say, hey, what is John Toon really like? Should I do this podcast interview that he invited me to? And then we have a colleague in common, Mooch, who says, no, you must absolutely do it. John has been a great supporter of all of our work. And so these are the three of my guiding principles to make sure I'm choosing to work and spend time with people that I will enjoy growing with.
Thank you for the flattery. That's very appreciated. Obviously, now you're with Datasnip, but tell me how that sort of opportunity came about and what the process was like for you in terms of joining an audit tech business, because the audit tech space is not that big across the entire world. There aren't that many opportunities and roles.
Yeah. John, it's just a little less than a year that I joined Datasnipper, and it started with a call from the founder. So Marta, Jonas, and Kai reached out to me through somebody we know in common and shared a little bit on Datasnipper. And my first understanding was more around the product and company. It was intriguing, as I mentioned, given my experience at Intuit. I knew that they were building something very special and solving a real pain point for auditors, and I wanted to learn more. When I got on the phone with the founders, I think what I really appreciated about them right off the bat was, number one, their passion for building great products. This is not about having their name on big billboards or making a truckload of money. They just are intrinsically really motivated about solving a problem in a very elegant way for customers. Number two, it's their humility. So I think it's quite rare to find founders who are starting a search themselves for the CEO. This was not investor-led. This was not led by anyone else but them. And for them to recognize that, hey, we really want to bring someone else in who has seen scale, who's operational, who has deep operational experience and can help take Data Snipper to the next level. And for me, that was critical because I wouldn't want a situation where I work very closely with the founders who are very talented. And so I loved that they wanted to bring someone on. And that in and of itself sets a great tone as a partnership with me running the company, but me leveraging them for all of the talents that they bring to the role. And so we continue that. So actually from the first call to when I started at Data Snipper, it was 45 days. It moved incredibly fast because that's how sure I was of the team and of the prospect of joining this company. And I continue to work very closely with the founders.
For those listeners who aren't operating in the audit space, of which we definitely have a few, we should probably expand on what Data Snipper does precisely and why it's been such a success in the market. Obviously, given the recent valuation in particular, $1 billion valuation is still fairly unusual for someone new into the market. And they have really taken the market by storm, haven't they?
Yeah, a little bit about Data Snipper. So if you think about at the heart of what auditors do, it's taking a lot of client data, whether it's structured or unstructured, from PDFs, handwritten notes, bank statements, invoices, contracts, and you're trying to match them to a sample list. And that has usually been a process that has taken hours, if not days, to work through, particularly as you get into busy season. And Data Snipper took at the heart of it that problem and made it absolutely automated. You can bring in any document and bring it into Excel with just the click of a mouse, and we'll automatically match those documents for you. But we will also make it easy for you to cross-reference. So anytime you mouse over any piece of data on your spreadsheet, we will immediately pull up the supporting documentation, the original document. We'll also work with your financial statements. We'll find anomalies, discrepancies from your data, allowing you to, again, focus on what you do best. Instead of trying to match data or find errors, really focus on where the high-level vulnerabilities are for the customer and advise your customer on how to address them. We just announced Data Snipper for Excel Online, so you can collaborate in real time. We have co-authoring. If you're teaching someone on your team, you can work with Data Snipper in real time with your team members. We just launched WebSnip, which allows you to bring any data from any website, custom ERP, any sort of web solution, directly into Data Snipper, again, for your audit procedures. And we're also working on a whole set of new AI products. So more to come on that. And we're super excited about this funding round. To be honest, it's been less about the money. Data Snipper has been doubling year on year while being profitable. But it has really been about the expertise that we bring to the company to accelerate our product vision, to accelerate our geographic expansion, so we can deliver more great experiences for our customers in market.
My firm's been using Data Snipper for just over 2 years now. And I think it's the one product that if we took away from the audit team, there'd be mass resignations or a riot or something, because it is valued so highly and has had a huge impact. And a huge impact, I think, on an area that doesn't really add a huge amount of value to the audit per se, although it's sort of a necessary evil, if you like. But it's also an area that's fairly mundane in terms of the teams that do that kind of work. It's not hugely engaging. It is robot work for human beings, unfortunately. And you guys have taken some of that pain away. So it's very much appreciated by our team.
I'm so happy to hear that, John. And that's exactly what we want to do, is we want to ensure that auditors can do what they do best and do the work that they joined this profession to do. No one joined auditing to look through reams of paperwork and to match it. Not the mundane, not that soul-crushing work. Let Data Snipper do that, allowing auditors to, again, focus on the most important risk analysis aspects of the business for their customers.
You mentioned that Data Snipper has been doubling in size almost every year, and the growth that they've had has been incredible, really. The way they've gone about that growth in terms of, haven't spent a huge amount of money on direct marketing in countries. They've not been doing a lot of events up until fairly recently. A lot of fairly guerrilla type marketing in terms of the stuff that you see on LinkedIn and the word of mouth, obviously, which is hugely valuable and important. How has that come about? Because most people think an audit tech or an accounting tech product needs some kind of level of direct marketing to get it into people's thoughts and minds before they go and try it out.
Yeah. I think that's the beauty of Data Snipper, is that there was no real paid marketing effort until even just a year ago. There was no sort of sales development team until a year ago. So a lot of it is very new and greenfield. And I think it's a testament to how much word of mouth and virality there has been for the product. And if there's something I remember from my time at Intuit is that auditors listen to only other auditors. That's most helpful. And rightfully so. It's a much more credible group to listen to your peers who've actually used the tool and understand the applicability and usefulness of it rather than to see something on a billboard. And so we've really focused then our marketing on allowing that community conversation to happen, whether it's on LinkedIn or whether it's specific blog posts about customer experiences. And we didn't actually start any paid spend. And even if you look at our marketing spend, it's very modest. It's very modest for our company of our size and scale. And we take pride in that because, again, we want to mostly allow auditors to speak to other auditors about their genuine experience and get out of the way so that they can do that as genuinely as possible.
And is that one of the things that's contributed to the profitability of the business? Because as you said, again, unusual, I guess, for a business of this kind of age to move so quickly into profitability. And I wonder if things like the Rule of 40 are top of mind for you in terms of thinking about how you move forward over the next few years.
Yeah, and full credit to the founders. They've always been very lean in how they've built this company and very thoughtful in how they've hired. And I think what you're not going to find is a lot of Bay Area tech hubris here, which is let's go hire, let's write as many checks as we can, as quickly as we can. And so the founders have really focused on building this business as sustainably as possible. And I've tried to keep some of that discipline and spirit since I've joined the company.
Yeah. Just moving into your role, we've spoken to a few CEOs in the past who've moved into roles where they have essentially taken over from the founders who've maybe worn many different hats, and there's always a challenge there. And then to bring someone like yourself into a much more focused role, I think it's an indication of maturity for a business, but it's also a good opportunity sometimes for founders to get out of their own way in terms of not trying to either spread themselves too thinly, but also give someone else the mantle to maintain the sort of the strategic growth focus for a business while they just maintain the interest and the enthusiasm they have for the core product. Is that how you saw it when you came into the business?
I saw it as a win, where I could bring in some of the operational experience I had developed from working at these amazing world-class high-growth companies. But I could never bring some of the passion that Marta has for product, that Kai has for the development of the product, that Jonas has for the customer experience, having been steeped with auditors for years. And so to me, it was just a perfect complement where we could really work together and build something amazing by really taking the goodness that each of us brought to the table to help DataSnipper in this next chapter.
Yeah. And that next chapter, was that sort of when you came in, was that revolving around an additional funding round, or was that something that just happened as a consequence of timing and everything else?
It was not on the agenda. I was not looking to raise, but there was so much inbound interest. And because we've been profitable, it wasn't a case that we needed the funds. But given the inbound interest, one of the conversations the founders and I had is, could we use this as an opportunity to bring on another set of skills onto our board, another perspective? Could it help us expand our network, help us expand to far-reaching markets that we don't fully understand? For example, we're now making our first hires in Japan. It's a market that we don't have experience in. And this is where our venture capital partners can really help us. We just made our first hires in Mexico City. And so these are completely questions that we lean on our partners to help us find great talent, to help figure out what does it take to be successful in these markets. And so these are some of the questions that we thought they could help us answer. It was not about the money. It was really about the expertise that they would help bring to the table.
And I guess, like you say, the access to those networks just helps to accelerate growth, doesn't it? It just makes things a little bit easier. Certainly from my experience when I deal with vendors, particularly coming into the UK, for example, people do value having local experience, having boots on the ground, as it were. And that can be challenging in itself, particularly if you spread yourself way too thinly without support.
100%. And that's what you get from having great partners is a playbook, a network, a set of great referrals, access to talent, access to expertise. And that just ensures that you're making fewer mistakes as you're expanding and growing into new territories.
You touched on AI, which I think is inevitable now for almost every tech business. Someone's got to drop that into the conversation. Where do you see AI coming more into the product? Clearly, you've already got it because you've got extraction technology in there. Are you going to be exploring things like large language models? Are you going to be exploring other elements of AI technologies to enhance the product? And what would that potentially look like without giving anything away?
Absolutely. AI is at the heart of almost every new product that we're exploring, every new feature that we're developing. And I think the possibilities are limitless. We just announced the Advanced Extraction Suite last week, which allows you with one click to automatically extract the most common fields of data based on the forms you've uploaded. So whether it's an invoice or a contract or a receipt, we'll use AI technology to automatically detect what type of document it is and says, okay, John, that looks like a receipt. So we'll give you the vendor name, the amount, and the date, because we know that's the most commonly extracted information. It will be different for a contract or different for an invoice. And so that is a classic example of the use of AI. And we already find that since we announced it, auditors are saying, hey, I need that and I need that now. I'm right in the middle of busy season and this could save me hours of time just dealing with extraction alone. But I think it's safe to say that every product or feature that we're working on today, AI is at the heart of it. And so there's definitely going to be more in the coming weeks and months.
And does that pose a challenge for you as an organization in terms of, is it a challenge in terms of build your own or maybe buy a large language model, for example, from elsewhere? Or how do you strike that balance between buy and build?
We want to build upon the best. We are not building our own LLM. There's no way that would be a good use of our time or resources, but building great applications that leverage the best of LLMs is what we're focused on. And so we have to always be very cognizant of where we can add the most value. Where we can add the most value is our understanding of the problems that our customers face, auditors, and how we may potentially solve them using LLMs. But we love to leverage best-in-class technologies when they're already built and build on top of them.
And one final question. What else does the future hold for Data Snippet? Would acquisitions be on the cards, or would you potentially branch out into other parts of the accounting audit space, tax, payroll, et cetera? What do you think the direction of travel might be?
Yeah. Today, we already serve customers beyond external audit. Our customers are in tax, internal audit, financial control, government audit, and advisory. My focus is to solve as many problems for audit and finance professionals as possible. And I'm just looking across that entire value chain and saying, okay, what's the next most painful area? What can we do to make that easier for our customers? Mostly because it's such an underserved market, John. There's too much manual work and there are too many point-to-point solutions. And so the more problems we can solve in an integrated way, I think the more we can delight our customers. I think whether we build it or we acquire it or we get there through a partnership is a natural follow-on question that comes out of that. And I don't know the answer yet. It depends on which part we decide to solve and what makes sense in terms of the best solution.
Amazing. Well, Vidya, thank you very much for your time. It's great to see another woman, if I could say, in a high-profile position in a high-profile technology business. I think there's not enough female representation in our tech companies sometimes. I wish you every success over the next few months and years. And yeah, let's see what Data Snippet brings to the table.
Thank you, John. It's been a pleasure.
Very much.
Thanks for joining us in this week's Digitals in a Cruel World. Please remember, if you have not done so already, to join our community in the via the Digital Disruptors. We've got quite a good little community vibe building now, and we're also doing a few more in real life events, which if you want to get the jump on the tickets to make sure that you join us ahead of the Digital Accounting Show in London in about a month's time. John, remind us of the date.
Oh, bloody hell. The 15th is our event. So that's the Monday, 15th of April.
15th of April. If you really want to join us at that event, John, what are we doing?
So we are going to Immersive Gamebox in Shoreditch for a couple of hours of games and a bit of food and a couple of drinks, I'm sure, and we'll see what else the night takes us.
What's the capacity again, John?
I think we've got around about 90 to 100 available. Get online, you'll find the links on our socials and bits and pieces, and you can book your tickets, and when they're gone, they're gone.
They're gone, they're gone. If you haven't done so already, please join our community. Listen out for the next podcast. If you also haven't done so and fancy doing us a nice solid, then leave us a review on the podcast or get in touch with your feedback. We always appreciate it. We've had quite a lot of feedback recently at one of the International Women's Day's luncheons I had the benefit of attending, run by Telleroo, Swoop, Capium and Zero. So thank you very much to the ladies who put that on. And again, it was really helpful to have a lot of different feedback from different places. We really value it. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind doing so, leave us some comments, feedback, a review, whatnot, and we will take it into consideration. Thanks very much, and we will catch you on the next one.